Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 25th day of July, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Gall, and let's start our wrap-up of the week past with a story that encapsulates just so much of what's really going wrong in America with a K today, which makes it all the more important to realize that at least there are a few people in positions of power that still have a sense of humor. I wish this had happened sooner. This comes from WesternJournal.com about Republican Representative Louie Gohmert of Texas, who introduced a resolution on Thursday to ban the Democratic Party or any other political party that supported slavery because, you know, white supremacy and all. And I guess if you really want a virtue signal, well, let's do it right. The move came a day after a measure supported by Nasty Nancy Pelosi regarding Confederate statues passed the House, and that bill calls for the removal from the Capitol of any statues of those who backed the Confederate States of America, according to Politico. So, says Gohmert, hey, what's good for the goose ought to be good for the gander, right? Let's ban any political parties that were even bigger supporters of slavery. Quote, since people are demanding we rid ourselves of the entities, symbols, and reminders of the repugnant aspects of our past, then the time has come for Democrats to acknowledge their party's loathsome and bigoted past and consider changing the party name to something that isn't so blatantly and offensively tied to slavery, Jim Crow, discrimination, and, of course, the Ku Klux Klan. Unquote. He went on to argue that in light of calls to rename schools, military bases, and city streets, the Democrats ought to at least follow suit themselves. Quote, whether it's supporting the most vile forms of racism or actively working against civil rights legislation, Democrats in this country perpetuated these abhorrent forms of discrimination and violence practically since their party's inception. And to avoid triggering innocent bystanders by the racist past of the Democratic Party, he said, I suggest they change their name. This is the standard to which they're holding everyone else, so the name change needs to occur. In his resolution, Gohmert also pointed out that the Democratic platform in the 1840s and 50s, before the outbreak of the War to Prevent Southern Independence, aka Civil War, explicitly called for Congress not to interfere with the institution of slavery and warned that to do so would, quote, endanger the stability and permanency of the Union. And he also pointed out that it was Democrat President Woodrow Wilson who introduced a segregation policy in 1912 in the U.S. government, and it was Democrats who waged a 75-day filibuster in the Senate in 1964 in an attempt to block the Civil Rights Act. And let's not forget, too, that the nation's longest-serving senator, racist Democrat Robert Byrd, was in fact a grand dragon in his native West Virginia Ku Klux Klan chapter when he was a young man, and when he died in 2010, Hillary Clinton lauded him as her mentor and the heart of the Senate. And while I'm getting really tired of lying idiots pushing worthless masks on dumbed-down lemmings and mayhem and riots pushing formerly free Americans into an updated version of the Bolshevik Revolution, it is kind of rewarding to see great big whopping lies slowly being revealed. And we've got a whole bunch of those to start things off today. And let's start with an update on the Gulag censorship story I did yesterday via not only one of the targets, but a couple of mainstream publications that actually aren't yet. True to form, the Gateway Pundit's headline is the most blunt. Yesterday's Google glitch, they say, and they put it in quotes, that disappeared a bunch of conservative websites, reveals a secret blacklist. Not that we didn't already know about this, which proves that CEO Sundar Pichai lied to Congress under oath, and yeah, there you go, what else is new? It's clear today, writes Jim Hoff, that Gulag, to Facebook and Twitter, are using their own political blacklist to censor and diminish traffic to prominent conservative publishers and their supporters. And he goes on to say that if you search Google for prominent conservative voices, including the likes of Mike Cernovich, Joe DeGeneva, Jack Posobiec, or the Gateway Pundit, you'll see hit pieces and biased attacks. Whereupon he reminds us that back in April of 2019, Project Veritas released a bunch of leaked documents from a Google insider that revealed that the Gateway Pundit, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, Newsbusters, American Thinker, MRC TV, American Lookout, Twitchy, Daily Caller, National News, The Rebel Media, Life News, BizPack Review, Young Cons, and many others were being targeted, censored, blacklisted, and of course silenced by Gulag. But the really interesting story is that at least some of the waste stream is now having to admit that. Google, says a piece from the Daily Mail in the UK, is secretly blacklisting certain sites to prevent them from appearing in search results, despite publicly denying doing so, according to an investigation by the Wall Street Journal, which reported that the search giant has been blacklisting certain spam sites, their term, since the early 2000s. And here comes the 80-20 rule, folks, which makes it go down a bit more easily, as well as those featuring child abuse or copyright infringement, in order to prevent them from appearing in search results. And the WSJ also reported that conservative publications have been blacklisted in Gulag News and said that it's seen documents to support this claim, fueling cries of political bias. According to a draft policy document from August 2018 that the Wall Street Journal was able to see, the purpose of the blacklist is to, quote, bar the sites from surfacing in any search feature or news product sites. And the policy instructs engineers, whom they laughably call maintainers, to focus on sites that actively aim to mislead. In other words, tell them when their deep state masters are lying to them, rather than those that simply have inaccurate content. You know, like CNN, NBC, the WAPO, and the New York Times. The Daily Mail headline sums it up this way. Gulag does blacklist sites, has targeted conservative news sites, and does change its algorithms to favor big businesses, says the new report, despite the fact that the lying scumbags at the company deny the whole thing. And this is almost funny. A Gulag spokeslawyer said that the company, quote, does not manually, did you catch it there, folks, determine the order of any search result. Now, if you automate it, then you can lie about it with impunity, it would seem. Because isn't that what blacklists are for? Oh, yeah, and there's this, too. The Wall Street Journal report also claims that Gulag made algorithmic changes to its search results that favor great, big, well-connected businesses over smaller ones, and at least in one case made changes on behalf of eBay, which is a major advertiser. Tell me you're shocked. Now, I do have to say this, folks. If Gulag was, in fact, a private business independent from Big Brother, and not massively subsidized by everything from contracts to special privileges, not to mention the well-known special protections under Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, and if they didn't consistently buy up all their competitors too, well, maybe this wouldn't be so much of a problem. There is, of course, the continued issue of perjury. Oh, and let's not forget treason too, since they seem to have a lot more affinity for communist governments like in China than they do free republics. So I guess there's a pretty good case to be made for calling them an enemy both foreign and domestic. And while Congress certainly hasn't yet declared war on the foreign nation of big tech, at least it's somewhat encouraging to see that so many of their lies are finally being revealed, in spite of their efforts. In St. Louis, different lies are being revealed. Remember the McCloskeys, who actually thought they could use force to defend their mansion against Black Lives Matter invaders that busted down their gate and trespassed on private property? Well, the Soros puppet city prosecuting attorney not only seized their weapons, but is trying to indict them for some kind of a crime for thinking that they still could own private property and defend it under the Second Amendment, has now been busted for trying to rig the evidence. Says the Zero Hedge summary from KSDK TV Channel 5, the pistol that Patricia McCloskey waved at prosecutors who broke down a gate to trespass on their private street was in fact a non-operable prop used during a lawsuit they were involved in. So a member of the circuit attorney Kim Gardner's staff ordered the crime lab, sick, to... No, actually, it makes sense if you think about the fact that this is a lab that is involved in committing crimes. The crime lab was ordered to disassemble and reassemble the gun, making it operable so that they could charge them with more serious crimes, and it was thus capable of lethal use in the charging documents that were filed Monday. Says their story, in Missouri, police and prosecutors must prove that a weapon is readily capable of lethal use when it's used in the type of crime for which the McCloskeys have been charged. And the problem is that Assistant Circuit Attorney Chris Hinckley ordered the crime lab staff members to strip the handgun and then found that it had been incorrectly assembled so that it wouldn't fire, so they put it together so that it would, and thus we can charge them with even greater crimes. But the trouble is, according to the report, crime lab workers photographed their disassembly and reassembly of the pistol. Ah, come on, where's Hillary Clinton's staff and bleach bit just when you need it most? So the McCloskey's attorney, Joel Schwartz, to KSDK, it's disheartening to learn that a law enforcement agency altered evidence in order to prosecute an innocent member of the community, unquote. Well, it may be disheartening, folks, but get used to it. It's standard operating procedure in leftist America with a K. But again, at least the lies are being exposed. In the Socialist People's Republic of Denver, Colorado, police officers were told to retreat before that pro-police rally on Sunday turned into a melee. Said Officer Nick Rogers, president of the Denver Police Protective Association, the city's police union, "I found out that a retreat order was given by the incident commander. And we had one lieutenant step up and say, 'We're not leaving.' And this lieutenant said, 'These people are going to get killed if we don't stay.' So he kept his group there. And that's the only reason that this didn't get worse, because somebody broke rank and decided not to retreat. And they stayed so that they could provide some assistance," unquote, to a group of people, folks, who were there to support the police, for crying out loud. Rogers was speaking on KNUS radio, and of course the Denver Police Department, as a socialist whole, did not respond to a request for comment, says the piece here from the Epoch Times. Michelle Malkin, conservative activist, was among those scheduled to speak at the rally, which was held Sunday afternoon at the Civic Center Park in Denver, and video footage showed a group of Black Lives Matter demonstrators and people dressed similarly to the far-left Antifa rioters approaching the stage shortly after the rally started. Some were wielding weapons like a collapsible baton and a metal rod, and they began assaulting people at the rally, including the speakers, who were forced to leave, according to video footage from the scene and accounts of those involved. "Nothing was done," said Michelle Malkin, "as women who were wearing Trump gear and holding their flags were throttled and strangled by other brutish women, all dressed in black and paramilitary gear." Rogers, who wasn't at the event, came forward later after he learned what happened and said he was embarrassed and sad. Quote, "Michelle, anybody that's listening who was there, that's not the rank and file, that's not the cops. That decision was made by someone else, and it's wrong, and I'm sorry," he said. Appearing on Fox News' Tucker Carlson Tonight, Colorado House Minority Leader Republican Patrick Neville told the host that the pro-police group was essentially surrounded by Antifa and outnumbered 4-1. Oh, and in case you're curious, the story includes this. It's not clear yet, anyway, whether the socialist Denver mayor, Michael Hancock, or the evil Colorado governor, Jared Polis, both far-left Democrats, were involved in the stand-down order, according to Neville. Here's one that's not hard to believe. It is another lie revealed, but it's not being reported much by the waste stream, as you might expect. Presumptive Democrat presidential nominee, the senile, creepy quid pro Joe Biden, smeared President Trump, calling him the first racist president at a virtual town hall sponsored by the SEIU. Virtual means they don't actually have to have any live people there, and so they can pretend he's talking to a great big crowd. But for Joe Biden to call Donald Trump the first racist president is a new brain-dead low, even for him. I mean, the guy's been around long enough to remember Abraham Lincoln was certainly a racist. He's on record wanting to export all the blacks back to Africa. And there have been a whole lot of racist presidents since, including, notably, the guy that the brain-dead Biden actually worked for, and covered for, and got covered for by. Oh, speaking of which, that reminds me, criminal quid pro Joe is now officially under criminal investigation in the Ukraine. Although, again, you're not going to hear much about that from the criminally negligent networks. And since Joe Biden may conveniently forget what he said, the video shows Biden claiming that Trump is the first racist president, saying, quote, "We've had racists, and they've existed. They've tried to get elected president. He's the first one that has," unquote. Whereupon Katrina Pearson for the Trump campaign issued this blistering statement calling out creepy quid pro Joe when it comes to race. Quote, "This is an insult to the intelligence of black voters and is really rich coming from a guy who proudly befriended segregationists, touted an award from George Wallace honoring a former exalted cyclops of the Ku Klux Klan, worried his kids would grow up in what he called, quote, a racial jungle, marveled that Barack Obama was articulate for, you know, one of them, and clean, bragged about being from a slave state, and repeatedly used the N-word." And what do you bet you're not going to find those videos on CNN either, folks? President Trump, she said, loves all people, works hard to empower all Americans, and is supported by more black voters than any Republican presidential candidate in modern history. No one should take lectures on racial justice from Joe Biden. As a matter of fact, folks, people shouldn't take lectures from Joe Biden on anything, because he won't even remember himself what he said 20 minutes later. And there's more irony, too, today on the lies being revealed front. Communist China has come right out and said it. They want Joe Biden and not President Trump to win the 2020 election. Hey, anybody remember Russia, Russia, Russia? Says the Gateway Pundit and the National Pulse, China has now released an official state video confirming that, saying that coronavirus is a tool to beat President Trump. The story from National Pulse says China Global Television Network, GCTN, issued a nearly 6-minute video entitled Can COVID-19 Beat Populism?, in which the Chinese Communist Party-run network leverages the coronavirus as, quote, another straw on the camel's back to expose President Trump's hollow politics. And in addition to attacking the United States president, the video also went after China skeptic political leaders such as Brazil's Jair Bolsonaro and Britain's Boris Johnson, confirming that the CCP is leveraging coronavirus to their benefit, and that they would evidently clearly prefer a senile socialist to the guy currently in the Oval Office. Well, we haven't really talked yet about the elephant in the room, so let's go ahead and do that next. And here we go with some news from the United States of Lemmings, where most people simply watch all of what their parents and grandparents and who knows how many levels of great-grandparents work for, even die for, without so much as raising a finger or pulling off their idiotic masks. Not only because they're drinking the COVID Kool-Aid, but they're literally bending over and bowing before the Bolsheviks, who are, of course, turning out to be the very people issuing the anti-constitutional mask orders. And since the waste stream always seems to want to talk first about the booga 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 numbers, let's start there and debunk a bunch of the BS people are being fed. A flaw in a manufacturer's coronavirus testing system used by labs across the United States are causing false positives in a large majority of tests. Who could have thought it? Department of Public Health scientists in Connecticut discovered the flaw in the testing system manufactured by Thermo Fisher Scientific. It's used throughout the country, where affected patients were tested between July 15th to 17th, and out of a total of 144 so-called positive tests, 90 of them were confirmed to be false positives, which is an error rate of over 62.5%, and I'll say it again, you can get a better result by flipping a coin. And this is on top of places like Fox 35 in Florida determining the countless labs were already reporting bogus 100% false COVID positivity rates. There was, of course, the famous incident of a man who died in a motorcycle accident that was labeled as a booga 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 COVID-1984 death by state prevaricators. You do have to love this idiotic quote from Orange County Health Officer Dr. Raul Pino, who was asked about the motorcycle crash death that was called COVID-19 and said, well, you could actually argue that it could have been the COVID-19 that caused him to crash, unquote.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid, doesn't it, bloke?
I guess.
But wait a minute. This particular idiot masquerading as an Orange County public health official said, hey, it's 100. It doesn't make any difference if it's 99, unquote. Meaning what? You caught us on the one outright over-the-top whopper, but you didn't catch the other 63 we threw in there? Ha ha! In Washington State, there have been open admissions that every single gunshot death is recorded as due to the booga 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 communist Chinese virus. And I can't tell you how many stories I've seen about people who didn't end up getting tested, but still got a positive result in the mail or by phone. And let's not forget that in so many places, if you knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody who might have been said to be positive, whether they actually tested for it or not, well, they count too. But here's what ought to really raise people's eyebrows. In an era when it's obvious that a whole lot of communist traitors in government, especially in leftist governor's mansions, are unabashedly totalitarian, you have to acknowledge that the level of mayhem we're dealing with here isn't just due to outright unbelievable levels of incompetence, although there are certainly no shortage of useful idiots in the bureaucracy. And if you listen to insiders like Celeste Solem, former FEMA official, who's actually reporting information suggesting that there are people deliberately contaminating, and that's putting it mildly, the test kits, so that when they shove that swab up somebody's nose practically to the brainstem, they're actually implanting a biological package. And come to think of it, if you really want to get a whopping good wave two going, how better? But whether the test is a dangerous Trojan horse or just plain worthless, you do have to ask why would anybody want to take the thing. Anyway, you slice it. Flipping a coin is a much better option. Better still, take your supplements, keep your immune system strong, and don't worry about it. And for crying out loud, don't go around wearing a petri dish over your face. Let's follow it up with this piece from AFP and Yahoo News. Since last week, they opined sincerely, the small rural northwestern U.S. state of Idaho has been racking up booga, 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 500 new coronavirus cases a day. Who knows, folks? Some of them may actually be real. A sign of the exponential spread, they say, of the disease across the country.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Even though it only has 1.8 million inhabitants, Idaho, famous for its potatoes and meat processing plants, is seeing a virus resurgence as it also sweeps through the U.S. South and West. And just to show you how far over the top some of the fearmongers have gone, Jim Hoff with the Gateway Pundit reports that in Broward County, there are bureaucrats issuing an emergency mandate requiring citizens to now wear masks in their own home. And that even includes those that live alone. Oh, yeah, and if they don't have enough sick people already, just wait till the oxygen-deprived, carbon dioxide-overloaded nutcases end up with all kinds of other diseases from breathing through their very own petri dish for hours on end. We are certainly already seeing elevated cases of eye and nasal infections and facial skin rashes in many parts of the country. I bet you can already guess how many of those are going to be called COVID-related if the Waystream Media ever reported on it. And you know what, folks? This has gone so far over the top into the never-never land of dumbed-down insanity that I gotta wonder if CNN came on and said, hey, it's not enough to just wear your mask. If you really want to be protected from COVID-19 and virtue signal your political correctness and show that you're not selfish, especially if you're white, what you need to do is go in your garage, get in your car, keep the garage door down, fire it up, and breathe deeply until you quit breathing at all. Just don't take your mask off. And you just know they'll report it as a COVID death, don't you? Midweek, we got our first glimpse at this story. The Chinese consulate in Houston had a massive fire at their massive spy center. The first story I saw came from the Hal Turner radio show, who said that the Chinese embassy in Houston has begun burning documents, and the smoke from the papers being burned was so thick that area neighbors called the fire department, which was forbidden to enter the embassy grounds. But the destruction of the diplomatic documents began after two Chinese nationals were indicted for espionage for stealing U.S. secrets about the coronavirus vaccine. Think about that one, folks. Given Fauci, what could they possibly want to steal they don't already have? And other corporate and state secrets. And note that Japan engaged in similar burnings before December of 1941. The United States has thus ordered the embassy to be closed and its staff are to leave the United States within 72 hours, meaning by 4 p.m. this coming Friday. Zero Hedge's coverage begins by noting that Washington has turned the tensions with Beijing up to 11 by ordering that immediate closure of the Chinese consulate, and Senator Marco Rubio tweeted Wednesday that China's Houston consulate was, in fact, a, quote, massive spy center, and that forcing it to close is long overdue, which might help explain the panic document burning. Said the Wall Street Journal, all of this marks an unprecedented escalation and a political provocation unilaterally launched by the United States. This, at least, according to the Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman, Wang Wenbin. And this is almost funny. Reuters is now reporting that China is considering closing the U.S. consulate in Wuhan in retaliation, although some suspect the diplomats there wouldn't mind being stationed elsewhere anyway. By Friday, though, we had this story. China shuttered the American consulate, not in Wuhan, but in Chengdu, as what they're calling the new Cold War heats up. As Zero Hedge noted, the CCP mouthpiece Global Times warned in an article published early Friday morning that the closure of the U.S. consulate in Chengdu will cause more strategic losses on the U.S. side because, quote, Washington has long used its diplomats in Chengdu to infiltrate Tibet and other regions in southwest China, interfering in China's domestic affairs, unquote. And GT cited a top foreign ministry spokesperson who said during a briefing on Friday that the U.S. consulate in Chengdu was a thinly veiled espionage operation. You do have to ask, what else is new? But that's not all. China's foreign minister Wang Yi, one of the most visible senior officials in President Xi's Communist Party, said Friday that the current difficult situation in U.S.-China relations was, quote, entirely the fault of the U.S. For their part, the White House released the following just before 10 o'clock Eastern Time. The White House, just before 10 a.m. Eastern Time Friday, the White House urges Chinese Communist Party to cease these malign actions rather than engage in tit-for-tat retaliation with Chengdu consulate. Academics quoted by the Voice of America warned that this latest diplomatic standoff is a sign of that new Cold War and that there would almost certainly be more mudslinging and military posturing between now and the November elections, especially since it's no secret which senile old communist they would prefer in the White House. And we'll be back with more right after this.
My land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I went to break with stories of China and allegations of espionage and closed embassies and tit-for-tat and the new Cold War. And this evidently fits perfectly here, not only because it has to do with China and the CCP virus, but also their preference for socialists and totalitarianism in general. And that, of course, would especially mean those on the far left coast, which increasingly does look like a communist Chinese satellite. Exclusive, says Mike Adams for Natural News. A California apartment building has been locked down under mandatory quarantine of all residents. And it includes mandatory COVID-19 testing for all within, while at the same time all of the residents' key cards have been deactivated and security guards have been posted at all entrances during the lockdown. This is an apartment building in Ventura, California, it begins, where the residents found themselves prisoners in their own homes as they were locked down and subjected to mandatory COVID-19 testing and quarantine restrictions. A letter was sent, says Natural News, by the property manager to all 76 residents in the seven-story apartment building located at 137 South Palm Street in the city of Ventura, California, a building which caters to seniors and disabled residents and is, of course, government-subsidized housing. The letter's authenticity, says Adams, has been confirmed. They include a copy. And Adams goes on to point out what everybody listening is probably thinking. Gee, this sounds a whole lot like what happened in the communist Chinese city of Wuhan when they were locking people in their apartment buildings. As the letter puts it, except for essential workers, Achtung, no one will be able to enter or exit the building during the lockdown. There will be 24/7 security at all entrances and exits, during which time all resident card keys will be deactivated. Adams asked this question. Since when did the residents of this building sign any document waiving their constitutional rights as Americans, and under what authority are people now being held prisoner in their own homes and ordered to subject themselves to flawed medical testing that may cause them not only irreparable financial harm, but also physical harm as well? And the answer, folks, says your host who's been warning about this for two decades now, rests in the fact that they're living in government-subsidized housing. And guess what? Obviously, there are some pretty nasty strings attached. I mean, let's be honest here, folks. Did you think for a second that the totalitarian would-be globalist masters of the world were ever going to be willing to stop at just making their slaves wear little masks to show how subservient they were? Adams gets it mostly right, but doesn't quite go far enough. The people, he said, are now nothing but useful idiot pawns in all of this from the point of view of Big Pharma and the controllers who now run the media, the science journals, the CDC, the FDA, and all the other TLAs. To them, human rights don't matter. Individual liberty is irrelevant. Even sacrificing human beings as guinea pigs is of no consequence to these Big Pharma monsters because they care about nothing except using fear to generate revenue. And that's the place where I don't think he goes quite far enough, folks. It's not only about revenue. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's really about power and control. All institutions in America, he says, science, medicine, legislation, taxation, regulators, education, media, and more, now cater almost entirely to the profit interest of Big Pharma, the drug and vaccine manufacturers. Well, again, he doesn't go quite far enough. The bigger picture really is about control. It's complete and totalitarian. And as you may recall, Tricky Dick Nixon once said, asked in an interview whether he'd prefer to have money or power, I'll pick power all the time, because with power I can have all the money I want. And that's the bigger picture here. Don't forget, folks, the not-so-hidden agenda here also includes killing literally billions of people. which, if you think about it, eliminates at least some of the profit motive. But Adams is correct. Entire buildings full of Americans are now being locked down, and it's not about stopping a virus. It's about maintaining the necessary level of medical terror for the months ahead. Fear is the marketing weapon of Big Pharma, he says. Science be damned. Human freedom be damned. Rationality be damned. They'll do whatever it takes to keep everyone living in fear and nutritional ignorance so that no one has access to cures that work and so that they can force everyone to be corralled into the Big Pharma trap of vaccines and mass medication, even though readily available cures already exist and cost mere pennies per dose. I'll say it again. People that will voluntarily put on masks and suffocate themselves will put up with just about anything that Big Brother wants to foist on them next. And we're now seeing almost all of that unfold. Literally, at warp speed. Given all the absolute BS now being paraded out by idiotic, lying, oath-breaking politicians as science, when in fact it's absolutely the opposite, I want to spend a few minutes today talking about a great piece that I saw via Lou Rockwell from Dr. Thomas E. Levy, MD, JD, originally courtesy of orthomolecular.org, entitled COVID-19, How Can I Cure Thee? Let Me Count the Ways. And he begins, probably never before in history is anything or any event mixed fact, fiction, fear, and confusion like the COVID-19, and yeah, it's really COVID-1984, folks, plandemic this year. Political and media so-called experts have been in abundance, primarily regurgitating the same message as though it was something new every time they get interviewed. Wash your hands, maintain socialist distancing, and wear a mask as much as possible. And the public and the news media always take great comfort that some expert told them the truth. Trouble is, you can always find another so-called expert of at least equal credentials who will offer a completely contradictory perspective. Understandably, this generates much of the fear and confusion noted above, and of course, folks, that is a big part of the plan. The good hygiene, he notes, and virus avoidance advice noted above is helpful, although it's probably a bit overblown when discussing how important a mask is in preventing virus transmission, especially outdoors. It seems ludicrous, he says, to mandate mask wearing at all times, indoors and outdoors, although this is being given consideration, or worse, your host notes, by some governmental authorities as of the end of the third week in July. However, he says, this advice only scratches the surface with regard to the numerous options available to avoid contracting this infection or even to cure it. There is no point in suffering from misguided advice when COVID-19 can be prevented or reliably cured in short order. And here's the rub, folks. The reason you're not going to hear about what this good doctor is going to point out is because that would eliminate the need for the booga, 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 gotta have it or else vaccine. And in all likelihood, it won't be just one jab, it'll be a whole bunch. And therefore much more profitable, too, especially if you're completely free of all liability for the inevitable bad outcomes. Continues Dr. Levy, as will be clearly explained in this article, nobody needs to die from COVID-19 or even suffer needlessly, as many virus victims have remained quite ill for months before finally recovering. While still unknown to most practitioners of traditional or so-called modern medicine, acute viral syndromes, COVID-19 included, can all be easily prevented most of the time. And when such viruses do get a foothold in the body, they're still easily eradicated if the patient is not too close to death before receiving any of a large number of treatments known to be effective. Many doctors get attacked for promoting treatments as cures for infections that are traditionally considered to be incurable. Certainly it's true that some treatments promoted as being reliable cures are either fraudulent or of only nominal benefit. However, failing to assert the validity of a true cure for a medical condition is just as detrimental to the health of an ailing patient as is promoting a false cure. Or your host interjects here, something far more harmful, like a massive face diaper mandate. Many doctors know of highly beneficial treatments that cure or vastly improve medical conditions that are little affected by traditional therapies. Yet, fear of license revocation for telling the truth about inexpensive and natural therapies that cannot be protected by patents keeps most healthcare practitioners from promoting these beneficial therapies. And for similar reasons, folks, they won't come out and tell you the truth about the idiotic mask mandate, that it's counterproductive or worse, because they're afraid of losing their license. And if you think they're cowed, look at what retail businesses are being forced to endure. Nothing is ever embraced and seemingly not even permitted that would take away large profits from pharmaceutical companies, hospitals, and even many of the doctors themselves. Whenever you're absolutely stupefied, he continues, and cannot figure out just why a valuable treatment is not being used, take the time to identify, expose, and analyze the money trail that's involved with the prescription drugs and or overall treatment protocols that would be displaced. The reason for the avoidance or suppression of that therapy will then become apparent. Continues Dr. Levy, to be perfectly clear, the health of the patient must always be the primary concern whenever rendering medical care. And the irony of that statement, folks, if you ponder what's being done in the booga 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 land of COVID-1984 insanity, is that it's not only the opposite, because there aren't that many patients, but there are far, far more people that are intended to be real soon now. Remember the ancient medical adage, first do no harm? Well, the governors of a whole bunch of states certainly don't, because their intent is to first do as much harm as possible to as many gullible slaves as possible in order to really grease the skids for the second wave. There still exists, he continues, a First Amendment right in the United States that permits free speech, including the writing of books and articles. This right has even protected authors that openly provide information on how to make bombs and promote terrorism. So one can only hope that discussing inexpensive and effective medical treatments will continue to receive, too late, the same protection. However, he says it's very clear that this right is rapidly disappearing in light of the open suppression of free speech that's been occurring for some time, but especially over the last few months. In light of this, then, the information in this article is being presented. There already exist, he says, numerous ways to reliably prevent, mitigate, and even cure COVID-19, including late-stage patients. Some of the modalities have already been proven to work, although not necessarily in the classic prospective double-blind placebo-controlled trials on hundreds of thousands of patients. Because a perceptive clinician realizes that one overwhelmingly impressive case report where an agent or intervention promptly and unequivocally reverses the condition of a rapidly declining patient back to good health simply can't be dismissed as a one-off. Furthermore, he says the existence of such cases makes it completely unethical to put other patients into placebo-controlled trials when the treatment is dramatically beneficial to most patients and harmless to all. In other words, why would you subject somebody to a placebo knowing they may die as a result of the failure to do the right thing for them? Says Dr. Levy, to allow patients in the placebo group to suffer greatly or even die can never be justified. Unfortunately, he says, even when multiple scientifically sound clinical studies actually do get conducted and reported on inexpensive, non-toxic, and highly effective therapies, they rarely get utilized clinically. And although there are many good examples of such, he says, an especially noteworthy one is the suppression of good medicine concerning vitamin C. And that includes the continued avoidance of the use of intravenous vitamin C, especially in septic patients in the ICU. Conservatively, he says, thousands of ICU patients around the world on a daily basis could be saved or at least spared substantial suffering with a simple protocol utilizing intravenous vitamin C. Full stop, folks. One of the reasons we're told that you have to wear the face diaper and muzzle yourself is because we're so concerned about the ICUs being overrun. Well, hey, how about if we just treated people and cured them and got them out of there and didn't worry about getting a whole bunch of other patients lined up to follow them? Well, says Dr. Levy, this is not happening, even though the literature has unequivocally indicated the clinical importance and safety of vitamin C for over 80 years. He goes on to outline a number of treatments that are being ignored, some of them equally well documented and proven as effective, others have strong literature, research study, and clinical support, while still others are more experimental. But at least they beat the heck out of a mask, folks. Here we go. And here, since we're running out of time, I'll just go through the summary items. Like vitamin C, which he says prevents, improves, and cures COVID-19. It's been documented to readily cure all kinds of acute viral syndromes in which it's been adequately dosed. Vitamin D, likewise, prevents and improves. Zinc prevents and improves, and it's needed inside the virus-infected cells to stop virus replication by inhibiting viral RNA polymerase. Magnesium chloride prevents, improves, and may cure. It's been documented to have substantial antipathogen properties. Ozone improves and cures. Hydrogen peroxide prevents, improves, and cures. Hyperbaric oxygen may improve, may cure. Ultraviolet blood irradiation improves and may cure. Chlorine dioxide improves and cures. Dexamethasone improves. Chloroquine, and of course hydroxychloroquine, prevents, improves, and cures. This one has been widely used for decades, and of course now, given that we have a vaccine mandate coming real soon, widely ignored, in spite of its obvious benefits. And to some extent, folks, that really is the story. briefly, I'm going to point to another piece from Dr. Merrill Nass, MD, in Anthrax Vaccine Blogspot entitled How a False Hydroxychloroquine Narrative Was Created and More. And it makes the same point. Who wants a cheap, reliable cure if you stand to make hundreds of billions with a vaccine? And I can't help but add here, if you want to reset the entire global economy in the meantime. It's remarkable, writes Dr. Nass, that a series of events taking place over the past 3 months produced a unified message about hydroxychloroquine and produced similar policies about the drug in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and Western Europe. The message is that generic, inexpensive, and underline that, hydroxychloroquine is dangerous and should not be used to treat a booga 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 potentially fatal disease, COVID-19, for which, at least as long as they're able to keep so many of them submerged, no other reliable, and you got to put that in great big quotes, treatments. How is it, asked the doctor, that hydroxychloroquine has been used safely for 65 years in many millions of patients, but somehow the message was crafted that the drug is safe for all kinds of other uses, but dangerous when it's used for COVID-19? Well, it's dangerous to certain big vaccine manufacturers' profits, obviously, and certainly to a whole bunch of tyrants who stake their political futures on the tyrannical lockdown. Former Congressman and presidential candidate Dr. Ron Paul is among those pointing out the big holes in the latest booga 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 COVID spike narrative. He too points to motorcycle accidents ruled COVID-19 deaths and notes that in the rush to paint Florida as the epicenter of the second wave of the COVID-1984 outbreak, government officials and their allies in the mainstream media have stooped to ridiculous depths to maximize the death count. Oh, and of course the case count too. We've debunked those bogus numbers for weeks now. Sadly, the motorcycle death fiasco was not an isolated incident. In fact, he says, the so-called spike that's dominated the media for the last couple of weeks is full of examples of such chicanery. Washington State last week revised its COVID death numbers downward when it was revealed that anyone who passed away for any reason whatsoever that just happened to have COVID-19, whether he really had it or not, by the way, remembering all the false positives, was listed as a COVID-19 death. In South Carolina, the state health agency finally admitted that the spike in COVID deaths was only the result of delayed reporting of suspected COVID deaths that dated back quite a while. And similarly, he notes, an analysis of reported daily COVID deaths last week compared to actual day of death in Houston revealed that the spike consisted largely of deaths that occurred several months ago, from April through June. Why delay the reporting until now? Isn't it odd? Doesn't it seem suspicious that so many states have experienced delayed reporting of deaths until Dr. Mengele, or Fauci, and his gang of so-called experts, who have more conflicts of interest than they do actual accomplishments, announce that we are now in a new nightmare scenario. So wear your facial petri dish and be afraid, be very afraid. Will Americans wake up, ask Dr. Paul, and start fighting for their liberty before it's too late? The next story I have to do is a really disturbing one, but I better introduce it with a story I've heard a lot about lately. Americans are buying guns literally like there's no tomorrow and seem to be gearing up for what's increasingly obviously coming, a civil war. Gun sales are up 95%. Ammunition sales are up 139% over the first 6 months of the year. Retailers have processed a record 10.3 million firearms transactions during that same time frame. And customers of all ages and demographic backgrounds are part of the ongoing sales surge. Says the National Shooting Sports Foundation, bottom line is that there's never been a sustained surge in firearm sales quite like what we're in the midst of. And as a summary from the Hal Turner radio show puts it, talk of civil war is now very much out in the open, and Americans even seem to know who the enemy is, communists from Black Lives Matter and Antifa. The trouble is, will they forget what Ben Franklin warned against and trade essential liberty for a little temporary security in the form of federal intervention? Courtesy of the Daily Mail in the UK, President Donald Trump set to escalate his federal intervention in cities on Wednesday by expanding what's called Operation Legend, deploying FBI and other agents to communist enclaves like Chicago and Albuquerque to quell what he claims is out-of-control violence. The move was announced Wednesday afternoon by Trump at the White House, again putting him at odds with far-left socialist mayors, especially infamous Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. Mayor, says the piece, have opposed deploying federal forces to tackle protests, but Operation Legend, which was started in Kansas City, Missouri, involves surging Department of Just Us, and not Department of Achtung Homeland Security agents, to tackle crime rather than protests. And here's where it gets murky, folks, and not just the fact that socialist mayors and governors don't want federal intervention. Operation Legend, says the Daily Mail, was launched in Kansas City at the invitation of local officials who were concerned about a rise in gun crime, not about protests. And it saw the FBI, DEA, and of course, ATF agents increase their already unconstitutional presence in the city. The Daily Mail quotes President Trump to say, "I'm going to do something that I can tell you, because we're not going to let New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and Detroit and Baltimore and all of these, Oakland is a mess, we're not going to let this happen in our country," he said. "There will be more federal law enforcement, that I can tell you," unquote. And therein lies the rub, because if you read the Constitution, and very, very few of these people, whether they're mayors, governors, or presidents, much less senators and congressmen, actually have, there are only three actual constitutional federal crimes. Treason, and we've got a whole lot of that that's not being prosecuted, piracy on the high seas, and counterfeiting. And arguably, we've got a whole lot of that that's not even being mentioned, much less prosecuted. Because basically, that's what the Federal Reserve does, and if we had a constitution, they couldn't even exist. And arguably, as your host has now said for years, if we didn't have a Federal Reserve, and thus didn't have the biggest debt bubble in human history that's now imploding and needed to be blamed on somebody else, we wouldn't be having these other distractions either. Which brings me to another story I want to spend a couple of minutes on, but I do have to introduce it by noting that, hey, I mentioned how hardly anybody actually reads the Constitution, especially if they're part of that government that's trying to undermine it, but I will. This comes from the few and enumerated powers actually delegated to the central government under the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8. And it says, "The Congress shall have the power to," and it lists a number of these, but not nearly as many as are currently being violated in the United States. And one of them says, "to provide for calling forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union, suppress insurrections, and repel invasions." And right there, folks, you have the heart of what should have been done and absolutely positively isn't, as we see not only a continuing invasion from the South and now from the West Coast, but also a massively funded and well-organized national insurrection with the clear goal of overturning not only what's left of the Constitutional Republic, but expunging even its history as well. And with that in mind, here's the real point. If Trump and the Congress actually wanted to do it right, they would call out the militia and suppress this insurrection, rather than further overturning the Constitution by further usurping federal power they don't have. And of course, for obvious reasons, none of the deep state players is even remotely going to pay any attention to that. By the way, the next paragraph in Article 1 says that Congress shall also have the power to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia. But gee, kind of like the entire concept of actual limitations on central government power, they just as soon prefer that doesn't even exist. Along with the Second Amendment, the First Amendment, the Fourth Amendment, and just about all the rest of the Bill of Rights to boot. Which brings me next to a piece from Jeff Deist at Mises.org, a fellow that I got to know when he was working for Ron Paul in his congressional office years ago. It's entitled, "About Those Spooky Federal Cops in Portland." And he begins, "Dear Portlandia progressives, a federal government big enough to take care of you is also a federal government big enough to take care of you. Because scary, unidentifiable police, federal black sites, and procedureless snatching of individuals from the streets are the wholly predictable and natural consequences of the very policies you've advocated for decades. Why do you imagine," he asks, "a big government with lots of power will restrict itself to the cozy social justice issues and economic takings you support? Can a government capable of seizing the means of production not also seize you? You wanted everything run from Washington, D.C., and you got what you wanted. Progressives of all parties," he said, "have cheered the relentless centralization of everything associated with the state and the rejection of the Tenth Amendment for nearly 150 years. And he goes into a whole lot of detail that unfortunately we don't have time for, including the rise of the deep state and the creation of thousands of new unconstitutional federal crimes. So now," he asks, "you wonder why the feds were sent in to quell an uprising in Portland?" He notes that his former boss, Congressman Ron Paul, said this back in 2002 after the creation of the unconstitutional Department of Achtung Homeland Security, which he said, like all other federal agencies, will increase in size exponentially over coming decades. Its budget, number of employees, and scope of its mission will expand. And Congress, he said, has no idea what it will have created 20 or 50 years hence. when less popular presidents have the full power of a domestic spying agency at their disposal. And he goes on, presciently, to describe exactly what we're seeing today. From first TSA, then FISA warrants, to the undermining of the Fourth Amendment. There should not be unconstitutional federal agents in Portland or anywhere else. But if we actually had a constitution, we would have never gotten here in the first place. And the trouble is, we certainly won't get it back by continuing down the same treacherous road, now at warp speed. I wish I could be more optimistic, folks. But until people wake up, rip off the mask, and realize what's being stolen from them right before their own blinded eyes, and turn back to what's right, they literally don't have a prayer. And we're running out of time, too.